Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Welcome to the Heavy Hitters. If you tuned in today for some of your regularly scheduled programming, we're going to sorely disappoint you. This episode, we are going completely off script to have a fun chat with three besties here that have all been prior guests on the pod and have been longtime co-conspirators in the world of supply chain innovation, which is the topic for today, going all in on supply chain innovation. I'm Ty Finley with Iron Spring Ventures, and with me I have three guys I just spent the last week with out in Las Vegas for the big supply chain innovation conference Manifest, and we all thought it would be fun to be determined to jump on the and debrief on the pod here. So say hello, Santosh Sankar with Dynamo Ventures.
Hey, folks. I'm Santosh. Been on maybe a year or so ago. Great to be back. And partner at Dynamo Ventures.
And you run your own podcast, Santosh. So you flip the script here. Right on.
We got
Julian Cunahan, Schematic Ventures.
Hey, Ty. Thanks for having me. I think I was on a few years ago, and Ty has oddly not invited me back until today. We're a venture fund in San Francisco. We focus on supply chain tech.
Love it, Julian. The energy is exuding out of you. I love it. We're gonna have a good one. And last but certainly not least, Chris Stallman with Fontenelle's Partners.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me back, Ty. I enjoyed being on your podcast before, and Santosh and yours as well. Julian and I guess we're slacking. We don't have our own shows, so maybe we need to get on that. But hey, everyone. I'm a partner with Fontenelle's. We're a Detroit and Boston-based venture fund investing around this theme.
All right, right on, guys. Well, we all know each other. That's as much intro as we're going to do. But, you know, how's everyone feeling? I mean, that was a blitz of a few days in Vegas. I think it was great. It was energizing, but I am completely exhausted. Board meeting, pitches, portfolio tag ups that I think we had 100 people at our big happy hour. So I need Monday to just decompress and hence record a podcast here. But how are you guys feeling?
It was definitely tiring. I could have slept a lot more this weekend than my kids allowed me to, but it was awesome. Like, I think I told somebody this morning when I walked in, it's already on my calendar for next year. No ifs, ands, buts about it. Definitely will be there.
Yeah, they've already booked it up for next year, right? Early February again. So anyone's listening, Manifest, get your third try. So.
Yeah, I always put conferences in like two buckets. There's the ones that you get invited to, you speak at, you get the free ticket, you kind of make a couple meetings around. And then there's the ones that actually have like a degree of energy. And the amount of inbounds I got for this one probably rivaled CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, just in terms of like my inbox being full with, hey, are you going to be there? And I think we had eight of our companies there in attendance. So I was just running around playing matchmaker for a couple days.
Same. And similar to Chris, I think we had 14 portfolio companies there, really from start to finish. Every half hour was blocked. I did not intend this at all, but I made one session, which was the one that I moderated. And then everything else was just packed with meetings. I, like Santosh, could have used a little bit more sleep when I got back. From what I'm hearing, I don't know about you guys, I went back to the hotel after the dinners, but I heard the associate parties were late into the night.
Yeah, I've heard, Julian, you made it to the Nelly conference as well. So don't lie about where your allegiance went. And our event, I don't even think we really knew what we were getting into. I mean, we must have had 100 folks running around that happy hour. So, Chris, I'm with you. You know, I'll speak for myself. If us investors are good at anything, we're good middlemen. So I think we did our job appropriately well for our second happy hour shindig there.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is
it was awesome.
Santosh and I were trying to hit our minimum for the drinks order at the end. And
I heard these stories. There were some interesting bottles purchased.
Well, they took our order, said yes, and they came back around and said, we can't give you the bottles. And So like Stallman and I were sitting there, whiskey in either hand. We had everybody around us having two drinks in their hand as we're like running up against the clock before they're going to like cut us off for good. But everybody had a good time. So we can't really complain about it.
We right had on. A dinner event right afterwards that Santosh and I were by far the two most tardy people to show up.
Yeah, we actually sat down. They served us dinner. We didn't have to really wait at all.
Yeah, I may have been in that room and noticed that, but more power to you guys. You were the ones that held out. I love it. So, all right. Well, I bet folks are tired of hearing us banter on about Vegas. Let's chat. And this is tied into some of the manifest itself, but we got some questions today. I'll do my best to try to corral us, but let's start with kind of a macro pulse on where supply chain is, right? And supply chain gets hijacked a lot of times, as we know. But, you know, where do we start? We've got supply and demand whiplashes from COVID. We've got war driving a narrative of near and reshoring faster than ever. Inflation driving rates up. That's crushing the freight market now. We got CEOs getting canned. We got major rifts going across lots of freight firms. I can't even list it all. Where are we exactly at with the freight market right now? And are we in a good, bad, still completely uncertain part of the storyline right now? What, go to you first, Stallman. Where are we at?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I was catching up with a founder in the space late last year, and he was kind of lamenting, you know, does a recession kill supply chain innovation when everyone's supply chains are relaxed with a little bit less in demand? Is that resolve a lot of the issues we've seen over the last couple of years, irrespective of technology? I'm not sure I'm going to bet on that approach, but at least gives you a little bit of sense of kind of where some founder heads are at. I equate it a little bit to some of these awkward teen years, right? Where you had the early years, the excitement, you had the first couple innovations popping up, and now it's sort of like prove real results and get to the next stage. I'm not somebody, I'm in the business of betting for innovation. I'm not betting against innovation. I think we're going to continue to see it throughout the course, you know, of whatever that remains in the cycle, you know, to come going forward.
If I would say one thing brought us to this point, it would be Amazon. Amazon has always led from the front as far as supply chain tech, going back to their Arkiva acquisition, which everyone in the industry thought was a terrible acquisition. You know, the number of doubters around that purchase, I think it would be more difficult to find someone who supported it, who worked in warehouse tech at the time, than to find someone who thought it was a fool's errand. They've led from the front on warehouse automation. They've led from the front on last mile delivery by spinning up their DSP program, electrification of that particular fleet. If there's one thing that I owe supply chain technology's success to, it is Amazon.
All right. Amazon's so clearly an investor. Yeah, Amazon's clearly an investor.
They're not an investor.
I got a question. At the end of the day, we're all early stage guys, and it comes down to the talent that's driving this innovation. So kind of in this what then and now, I'll do more of the now. Where do you guys think we're at in kind of this talent maturation, right? Because we're for the first time, I think, starting to see a lot of the talent that scaled a lot of those names we mentioned and many others start to recycle. Maybe it's because equity, maybe it's whatever it is, but that has to only accelerate people that have the lessons learned in the domain, who also know how to build in tech and product. Is that an accelerant that's matured, Chris, or are we still in the teenage stages? Santosh, what do you think about the talent side of it?
I mean, I think kind of our founders who are invested in their teams are certainly one of the drivers as to why we can sit here, what, like 7-8 years removed and saying like, we've carved out a thing, right? And we sit next to FinTech and MarTech and HealthTech finally. Kind of thinking about our portfolio, I think 6 or 7 businesses that have publicly been put on our website have fiber from, call it this like first generation of supply chain technology. So it's happened over the last few years and I think it'll accelerate. Now we need to be thoughtful. I think somebody mentioned business models, right? Be thoughtful about, hey, like a lot of these people have seen a problem internally. They believe they can productize something horizontal that solves a product for the broader industry. But we need to be thoughtful as to, like, are those really large markets? Are those really enduring? Can you build a durable business through cycles? And that's where I still think, and in our portfolio, as we look at it, the outliers have come not necessarily from people who are like stewed in industry and have this deep, long experience, but people who've been balanced, teams that are balanced. You have somebody who has that, somebody else who doesn't have that. I think there is something to that in healthy tension and kind of pushing the envelope thoughtfully.
Right, yeah. It's a big part of the economy. I mean, what, 7 million people work in logistics as an example there. I mean, it's a pretty significant chunk. I mean, there's always going to be talent to be found. We've seen a lot of these earlier generations of unicorns spinning off more talent into other companies. And Santosh was alluding to this, but a lot of folks that we see as founders now are ex Uber Freight or ex Convoy or you name it. And I think that's to us a sign of an interesting ecosystem when you can catch those second and third generation founders that maybe played a key role early on in some of these other companies and have understood somewhat of the growth playbook or at least the relationships across the industry before they launch as a founder in the space. If it's a completely greenfield opportunity, I mean, we saw this in some of the early days of like AV and other areas and stuff where people have to sort of figure out the tech, the business model, how to weave all this stuff together. And it's some challenging spaces. And I think across supply chain and logistics, I think there's a lot of folks that just have that tribal knowledge they've developed from other experiences, whether those be tech companies or some of the more, you know, incumbents.
Well, let me ask the last piece here. I wanted to get to this one before we move on to the next section. Is there anything that just sticks out what we as an investor group could have done to help accelerate this to go faster? I mean, Julian, you even hit on like co-investors. It's an important part of this. Hopefully they don't all leave logistics when times get tough. But anything that sticks out, guys, that we could have done better and or do forward to help this digital transformation go even faster?
No, I don't. Well, are you saying in the past 10 years or going forward?
Going forward, or if you want to do retrospective, if something just stood out to you.
Retrospective, I think you needed the technology companies that look like incumbent products to create the ecosystem. So you had Convoy selling brokerage services to shippers. That's a product they recognized and they were willing to make that purchase under the hood, bringing a great sort of new class of talent to the category. So I don't know that you could have sped up the sort of buyer mentality. It needed that evolution. And robotics needed COVID to really sort of finally underline the ROI proof points for it. So I don't know if you could have sped anything up. And as far as speeding it up further, it's that new talent, that new profile, that new founder that Santosh mentioned that came into the space. They're doing it on their own. If you meet someone, an operator from industry, they are really great at LTL. But if you ask them how to ship something TL, they have no idea where that is, who to work with. If you ask a warehouse operator who C.H. Robinson is, they couldn't tell you. So the depth of knowledge required in each of those silos is so deep, it tends to keep operators very much isolated. It's that new class of talent, that new profile of founder that's thinking across silos. And they're also bringing in other sort of categories of enterprise technology to this space. They're bringing fintech, martech, the horizontals. So that I think is going to grow supply chain, because when you attach it to those categories, it makes supply chain that much more powerful when your marketing message is directly attached to shipping speed or the visibility on your upstream supply chain tied to exogenous risk factors gives you much more power over your business strategy and forecasting for that year. So I think it's that new class that's entering in. I'm really excited about what they're doing.
Right on. Any final stabs? Go ahead, Santosh.
I'll compliment that with, we had an advisor in our network who kind of turned around end of last year and looked at us and said, a lot of your business models, if not on the onset, somewhere between kind of when you seed them to call it Series B, start to introduce payments or lending or credit. And that's kind of why you have me in the network, because I help them think about it. But have you thought about like accelerants to that, right? And kind of one thing that he put on the table is go have a captive debt fund, right? Be their first debt lender, help them kind of stand up on their legs, understand how to get their pitch materials, understand how to negotiate, and then you graduate them on. And that's a really unique, interesting benefit. And we kind of heard him, we took it in, and we said, we have a lot going on our plate, but there's some value here. And we're going to revisit that, call it mid-year. But I think those kind of accelerant efforts, there's something there. But to Julian's point, it's just more so kind of tacking on to something that's already happening, right? And trying to make it go a little faster.
Right on. Well, I don't want to go to a workout group with you, Santosh. So I'm gonna avoid the overhang there. But interesting, to say the least. Well, let me push this forward then. All the time, and we get this question offline all the time as well. Trends. What are you seeing? What'd you see at Manifest? What's exciting? And so I usually call a little section what's hot and what's hype. But let's take it however you guys want to take it. I know this audience would love to hear. You know, we're a month in. It's crazy. It's already February 6th somehow. But where are you seeing some of these trends to all of these points, Julian, Santosh, Chris, you just made about this new class of founder, where there's opportunity because of all the pipes and plumbing, et cetera, that's been laid so far? What are some of those trends that you're seeing that you're getting excited about? And of course, if you want to throw out there where you think there's a lot of hype that's probably taking oxygen where it shouldn't, throw that out there as well.
Yeah, I'll just say we're spending a lot of our time on that digital infrastructure. We don't think all the pipes have been laid. We think the first wave of innovation was people looking for these point solutions. Like, I don't know where my truck is. I don't know where product disruption down the line is going to affect me. You know, things like that, or a new marketplace I need to tie into. And now everyone's sort of recognizing they have to backfill the infrastructure. And so we've made investments around integration platforms like Chain.io and companies that are in the data space like FreightWaves. We've got a company in our portfolio in Stealth that's doing some really interesting work in geospatial data. I think these become very central to like the new innovations to come. And so we're almost taking a step back and saying, you know, great point solutions, but how do we stitch all this together? And how do we get industry generally just better connected?
What do you think, Ty?
I couldn't agree more. I think, and I wish someone would do the homework on this, like infrastructure tools, if we want to broadly define it, however you want the category, because I think Stallman's spot on. All of the point solutions, there have been some pipes laid, but we're not even close to it. You couldn't go and make a run at something like Chain.io unless we would have had the visibilities and the TMSs and the ELDs all start to now become alphabet soup. And I think, Julian, you guys are in SVT robotics, Santosh included, around the warehouse, where a lot of things need to get glued together. So my short compliment to Chris is, I think if we're recruiting other investors in this new breed of founder, the party's just getting started, because it's now time to put it all together. But Julian, you got the smart comments here. Just don't be a pessimist.
Well, then I'm going to change my answer. I do think recession, the depth of the recession, that's still up for question. No one knows. I doubt the Fed knows. But during times of trouble, it's great to work with customers with really strong balance sheets and are still spending a lot of money. And in the next couple of years, that is the government. So one of the tailwinds is definitely around the IRA bill, bringing a ton of money to electrification. And those strong market tailwinds make it easier for early stage pre-seed seed companies working on electrification to sort of smooth out the rough spots in the PMF. You know, that you can't rely on that budget forever, but it is going to make the first 2-3 years getting to PMF and that launch period easier in what is a really tough thing to do, which is to build a new company. So electrification or any of the new spending bills that are coming out around supply chain, I think, are good places to look and to build companies in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Santosh, go ahead.
I'll hit you with like a positive point and then perhaps a negative point. But there's been a lot of talk around nearshoring, onshoring, whatever the hell you want to call it, right? But basically, parts of manufacturing, parts of supply chain are going to shrink and come back closer to North America, if not in North America. And that's going to be a catalyst moment for a lot of businesses to find product market fit. There are going to be lanes that are traversed by trucks that we never thought about. There's going to be needs for suppliers in areas and competencies that don't exist today. So you have these more traditional businesses, but how do you contract with them? How do you find them? How do you monitor them, right? There will be a multiplicity of supply chain to some degree, but it's going to be in sectors that are fairly inelastic around cost. Semiconductor, biotech, pharma, healthcare, consumables, composite materials, right? There's a theme, national defense, welfare, all that good stuff. But that's something we're really excited by. The IRA does kind of actually cornerstone some of that if you read the legislation around batteries, as Julian had mentioned. But that's looking forward. As I look backwards and perhaps where people got over their skis, and it'll be interesting to see how this is all reversed, is a lot of capital has gone into brokerage business models. Hell, I can think of a business that's received a lot of funding that it's still not clear what their top line margins are. And they are on some path to go public or exit. And I think we all need to kind of use this and have a reminder as to kind of keep focused and keep disciplined. Because if COVID has taught us anything, everybody got really damn excited. Investors maybe didn't do their homework. And we're now paying the price for it. People are seeing kind of corrections in their portfolio values. And it comes down to understanding what the hell you're funding. And not everything needs venture capital. And if it needs venture capital, it doesn't need it at the same quantum as perhaps something that's, you know, IT infrastructure from 5 years ago. So that's something I wish that did not happen. But we'll play it out. Let's see.
Yeah, and it's a perfect segue. While we're in this crystal ball mentality, folks probably also would love to hear, from a deals and dollars perspective, where are we going in this category, right? We've all seen, you call it, you know, your roommate's Stripe Airbnb, and there's one side of tech over here and valuations over there. And so no one knows what valuations are doing or where they're headed. Obviously, I think we're seeing some calibration start to normalize in the growth stage. But where do you guys think that we're headed for our specific sectors when it comes to round sizes, valuation, syndication? Any initial off the cuff here going into 23?
Should I get my crystal ball?
This is,
yeah.
Well, this is something I love talking about, because when I started in venture, seed rounds were, let's call it 2 to 3 million. And I, for example, I mean, this stretched through the end of 2019, seed rounds were 2 to 3 was a great number. And that allowed for a really strong syndicate of investors to help support the company. And Santosh and I are Ty, your back, have invested with, you invested and then you came back at a different fund and invested plus one again. We've seen the value of a lot of great investors working together on a seed round. And I am hoping that we return to that 2-year runway, great investor syndicate, focus on building a company as a means of hitting those next round metrics, as opposed to polishing optics to get there. And I think that return for brand new companies will feel much more natural. It's obviously, it's difficult for companies that have raised at high valuations and are going through changes right now. I'm not dismissing all the difficulties that all of us are very close to, but for brand new companies, I think the founders are going to be a lot happier working on building the company, talking to customers, building the tech, rather than just constantly thinking about that next 6-month round fundraise.
Well said. Anybody else?
We've kind of put together a framework where we think kind of your standard seed round is $3 to $4 million. And that should give you, to Julian's point, 2 years of runway in order to get to product market fit. And if you assume right now, probably for the balance of this year, founders are probably dealing with giveaways closer to 25%. They'll probably normalize sometime next year, and you're hanging out closer to 20%, which was the norm back in 2015, 16, when I started. My first seed round was, I think, two on an 8 pre. And that was a hot deal, and those are amazing terms for a founder. And I can't tell you the last time we did one of those at seed. That's like a pre-seed now.
Low end of a pre-seed sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think 2023, we're going to see a little bit of that Series B crunch we've all been talking about and expecting for a while, because it's going to be especially hard for some of these Series A companies where they thought you take a $1 million ARR business to a $5 million ARR business and you raise your B. And it looks like it's going to be more of like 8 to 10 million ARR business. You've got to hit a higher threshold now. And oh, by the way, cut your burn in half when you get there as well. And so I think founders right now are trying to just navigate those tricky waters of how do I still grow, do it a little bit more lean, more efficiently. You know, we know, and having been a Manifest, we all met with the same growth investors. They're all sitting around waiting. Like they're all waiting for companies to sort of hit their $20 million ARR type targets in order for them to deploy large checks into those businesses. But we also all know that while they'll say that, you know, they're going to be really discerning on operating metrics. And, you know, I remember having been now in this industry as a venture investor for 12 years, it's milestone-based financing. So I tell every company, like, show me your clear milestones. Like, I can understand some companies take a little bit more capital than others to hit those, but show me the path and make it ultra clear instead of just, hey, we're going to raise this round and hype's going to take us to another round in 6 months. That was 2021.
Yeah, that it's begin with the end of mine and know those milestones is true as ever, because I think everyone agrees the ideas of 2 week term sheets at ridiculous valuations off the table now. So build a real business. Okay, guys, well, besties, we're going to jump in, and you've not seen any of these doozies I have coming your way, but we're going to do some quick fire. And so quick fire means keep it quick, and we're going to try to wrap this bad boy up. So, okay, what is the first thing you'd do if you were the Department of Transportation Secretary for a day, Julian?
Oh, great question. DOT, I would mandate data interoperability across, I'd create like an ISO standard for data interoperability for the location of transportation vehicles, be that a ship, truck, last mile. I put ELDs in last mile, and then there's an ISO mandated standard around reporting location data.
All right, Julian's joining to run the Uber Freight Convoy JB Hunt Consortium there. You signed up. What you got, Santosh?
I would look to provide clear safety standards around autonomy and provide a clearing function as to how you can submit safety data, get it validated, get it appropriately, tested, and you then are in good standing for the next 12 months or 18 months, whatever the right time period is.
Julian stole some of my stuff around data interoperability, but I would create funding mechanisms for other modes of transportation that are beyond just automotive based and properly funding rail transport, micromobility transport, and everything else in between.
All right, I'm going to help. You guys stole a couple of mine. I'm going to help promote the Steam guys. How can we get rid of some of these low-level non-competes to free up some talent? Now, obviously, some account safeguarding going on, but I think we could do some help there as well. All right, next question. I'll start with you. Reverse order, Chris. Are you a shipper? Are you a broker? Are you a carrier, and why?
Oh, gosh. I mean, right now, I'd much rather be a shipper with rates where they're at today, although you got to deal with the demand side of the equation on the customer. Overall. But I think right now they are enjoying a moment where in a cyclical industry, power shifts from one party to the next. Power's kind of shifted back to them at the moment.
Okay, Santosh, where you at? That was philosophical, oh, Chris. I like that. I was just going, which one did you like the most? But I think it was an appropriate answer.
In terms of like the most, you got to hand it to the guys that run assets. that's like a tough job. And specifically like the flatbed guys, like you have to haul heavy shit. It's a very physical job. If you've like actually had to strap something down, load it, unload it, really kind of kudos to them. And all this in a backdrop in economic cycles, freight cycles that could be feast or famine.
I'm with Santosh. I'm a carrier. I'm a well-funded carrier because during times of difficulty, you can gain and win market share. The smaller carriers are struggling with lower margins. You've got your fixed asset cost, and it's going to be a difficult couple of few years. You may choose to join a larger carrier. So I'm a well-funded carrier, strong balance sheet. I can grow market share and build lasting relationships with shippers.
Right on, guys. All right. Well, the last one then. If you could meet one supply chain leader in 23, who are you going after to shake hands with? Santosh, kick us off.
Head of supply chain at General Mills or Kellogg. I think food supply chains is something we have few investments in, but it's continuing to be top of mind for us. And it's driven by a few drivers, kind of future of food and consumer profile. And based on an understanding of that, what does that mean as we back solve as to kind of the medium term and then long-term vision for food supply chains? So putting it out there for your Chicago crew, Ty.
I like it. Oh yeah, Stallman.
Any leader of a battery supply chain for one of the OEMs that's now trying to figure out how to pick up an existing supply chain, move it to the US, qualify for the IRA and everything that entails. Like, it's gotta be fascinating to hear some of those stories and how big of dollars and how quickly some things are getting done right now.
I'm gonna go with one of my favorite entrepreneurs, Brad Jacobs. No one else builds businesses in supply chain like Brad. Someone I really admire with the size, scale, and speed of how he builds billion-dollar companies. Also, work ethic is despite all the success, still there. I have been at conferences and he's handing out flyers in booths. So if I would meet someone this year, it would be Brad Jacobs.
Pretty impressive guy. I'm going for HEB, the hometown Texas answer. I think HEB even was in the Wall Street Journal talking about seeing the COVID inventory pool before anyone else. So I'm going for the hometown grocery store. But all jokes aside, besties, we got a hell of a 23 ahead of us. The story is just getting written. So appreciate you sharing some lessons learned. And Julian, I will invite you back on the podcast at some point. Pessim optimist. So cheers. All right. Cheers, gents. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks.